This lesson deals with six problems in the husband-wife relationship. Have we dealt with problems before this lesson? Yes. For example,
the purpose of marriage.
Communication. Communication, big one. Recognition of roles and authority. The kinds of love. So don't let the title of the lesson mislead us to think, oh, we're just now getting to problems in the relationship. Failure to understand and to apply the things we've studied thus far will certainly create problems. But we've got some specific areas that we're looking at in this lesson. And we're looking now at flirtatiousness. So if you have your Bibles open to Malachi chapter 2, verse 14, he said, "The Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have dealt treacherously." Treacherously. The word treacherously refers to a violation of allegiance or trust. What is the beginning of that definite commitment of loyalty and trust in a marriage? Where did it begin?
Wedding day.
What'd you say on those vows? That's right. Any of us remember what we said on those vows? I, in the presence of God and these witnesses, solemnly vow to thee to take thee as my lawfully wedded wife, to have and to hold as my very own from this day forward, for better or for worse, to love you in sickness or in health, in prosperity and adversity, to cherish and honor you, and forsaking all others, to keep myself for you and you alone, until death do us part. Is that a covenant? Yes, look at the verse. You dealt treacherously, though she is your companion and your wife by covenant. So you vowed to your mate that you would keep you to her or him alone. Does that include your hands? Does that include your eyes? Does that include your words? The word flirt. Here's a definition of the word flirt. To behave amorously, that is the idea of love, to behave amorously without serious intent. And so people sometimes will touch people of other genders, and people's mates, or maybe somebody that's not married, they're not married to. And if someone says something about it, what's the response?
Oh, in your head.
What?
It's in your head.
Yeah, it's in your head. I'm just playing. Maybe. Maybe. But we have to be so careful, because we pledge to our mate this commitment of trust and loyalty. And it's so important that a marriage is built upon that, to where the other mate never has to doubt that in their mate. In 1 Corinthians 7, when we looked at 1 Corinthians 7, instead of the word conjugal relations, or the word for the marriage act, what word did he use to refer to that?
Touch.
Why would he use the word touch? It's a figure of speech, obviously. Why do you say the pot is boiling instead of the heater's up? Why do you say the pot's boiling? Or why do you say the window when the you're boiling water, why do you say the pot is boiling instead of the window shade is open? You don't mean the pot. Why do you use the word pot?
It holds the water.
It holds the water. There's a connection. There's a relationship. When you use metonymy, there's some kind of relationship. And so touch is clearly related to what he was talking about, the sexual act. And so this is important for married people. It's important for unmarried people. Young people sometimes don't realize the impact of a touch. And I know I had a young daughter, and she was very open, very friendly. We'd try to talk to her. Your touches of the guys are taken differently than what you may intend. And so it's a very, very powerful thing. And certainly that's true even though people are married. So if a person has made this commitment to their mate to be true to them, they should avoid all kind of actions that would lead to it. Look at Proverbs chapter, or cause doubt. Look at Proverbs chapter 7. In a previous class, we talked about learning from the competitor. This is a good example of where we can learn from the competitor. In Proverbs chapter 7, this woman is really out with a purpose, and her purpose is to entangle this man in a sexual relationship. So in verse 10, what does she use to do that? Verse 10. Her dress. How important is it that we as parents, listen, teach our children the importance of how they dress? Parents are sometimes, their daughters are growing up and maturing. They're so proud. They're pretty. Look at the way they dress. Tell you what, those guys at school are looking. I guarantee you. When I was in high school, we were on the field outside playing ball, football, baseball. I guarantee they were looking over at the other field where all those girls were dressed in those shorts. They look. And so this woman knows the power of dress. I don't know what she is wearing, but dress sends a message. You may not intend to make the announcement that you're making, but this woman knew the power of dress. I didn't intend anything by it. What is that? Flirtatiousness. Don't dress like a flirt. Before you leave the house, look. What message are you sending? Look down in verse 13. What did she appeal to? What'd she use? Kiss. She kisses him. There's nothing wrong with kissing somebody that's not your mate as long as it's a holy kiss. Remember Romans 16:16? Be sure it's a holy kiss. That's important. And you don't have to be too smart to know the difference. And so this woman uses kiss. And again, a great opportunity for parents to teach their young daughters and their sons the power of a kiss, where it can lead. This woman knew where it could lead. And she was using it for that purpose. Be careful. There's power in these things. God intended it that way to make the marriage wonderful, to make romantic love beautiful. All right, look down again in verse 21. In verse 21, what does she use?
Speech.
Her flattering words. Words can be flirtatious, amorous, suggest love, lead down a path. Be careful of what you say. You don't ever want your mate to feel threatened because of the way you talk about that girl on television, that cheerleader, or some woman at the office, or somebody else you know. So flirtatiousness is something that ought not be true of those who are striving to serve God, and it can definitely be a problem in the marriage. All right, our next area is the flip of that. While flirtatiousness is definitely a problem, and we need to avoid it, the other side of that is when a mate is unduly suspicious. Now, if there's definite cause for concern, that's one thing. But sometimes a mate interprets unfairly everything that a person does as an act of flirtation. And they're suspicious. They have no indication. They have no proof. And then they began to accuse their mate or accuse the other party. Now, that's going to cause some problems. Look at Proverbs chapter 12. We have this on your lesson. Proverbs 12. Let's start in 17. He who speaks truth tells what is right, but a false witness, deceit. So, false witness is put in this parallelism as opposed to truth. So if you say something about somebody that's not true, what do you become? A false witness. The Ten Commandments, remember that? You shall not bear false witness. What if it's your mate? Is that okay? No, it's not okay. And look at the next verse. Look what happens. When we accuse someone falsely, maybe viciously, maybe with the intent to hurt, there is one who speaks rashly like the thrust of a sword. So you thrust those words into them. You apologize later, but the scar is there. But the tongue of the wise brings healing. Verse 19, truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is but for the moment. So while flirtatiousness should not even be anywhere in the neighborhood of our marriage, the other side of it is not justified either, and there's problems both ways. Look at Exodus chapter 23. Exodus chapter 23. Verse 1. You shall not bear a false report. Now read the rest of the verse and tell me what may cause you to bear a false report. What does the rest of the verse indicate may entangle you in that? Following the multitude. Other people said, well, that's convenient, isn't it? Somebody said, boy, we get in trouble with that. They said, be careful of repeating what they said or what somebody said. You do not want to be guilty of bearing false witness, especially when it can be so tragic to people on their jobs, in their families, and certainly in their marriages. Do not join your hand with a wicked man to be a malicious witness. Of course, that's a wicked man. That's a fornicator, idolater, murderer, thief, right? What's the wicked man here? What's in the text? Malicious witness. Somebody's got it out for somebody. They're out to hurt them. They say something about it that's not true. Oh, then you pick it up and repeat it. Be careful. So, verse 2, you shall not follow the masses in doing evil, nor shall you testify in the dispute, so as to turn aside after a multitude in order to pervert justice. Number of people that says it doesn't make it right or wrong. Verse 3, nor shall you be partial to a poor man in his dispute. In other words, it doesn't make any difference about his social status. Rich, poor, white, black, male, female, doesn't make a difference. And so, look down at verse 7. Keep from a false charge. Is that what it says?
Far.
Far from a false charge. So where should our effort be? Be careful about charges. Keep far from a false charge and do not kill the innocent or the righteous. How would you kill them? With your charges. Isn't that interesting? I'm not a murderer. You could kill people with your charges. And this would apply particularly to a court of law that they had back then, where witnesses would come and could testify even to the death of someone. But we can kill someone without taking their breath away. And so he said, I will not acquit the guilty. Who's the guilty in the text? The one making the false charges, right? Maybe they're guilty, but be careful. Let them and God handle that. Got to be so careful. I don't have it on your lesson, but many of you are familiar with the passage in the New Testament. So you see a brother acting in a way that you feel like is not only inappropriate, but that it's sinful. What does Jesus say you to do? Go tell the preacher, right? Go tell the elder, right? Talk to them. Matthew 18:15. Go reprove your brother. That's right. Oh, I don't want to get involved. Of course, I'll tell somebody else about it. Really? And so, look at Proverbs 17, verse 4. Proverbs chapter 17. Look at verse 4. An evildoer listens to wicked lips. A liar pays attention to a destructive tongue. Again, the caution of getting what we think or say from somebody when it's not true. We don't want to join in that. And so be careful what you listen to. Check your information. You're all familiar with this verse. You don't have to turn there. 1 Corinthians 13, verse 7. Love believes all things. Does that mean you just believe anything anybody tells you? Is that what that's talking about?
No.
Cannot be that. If I understand the passage, it's talking about love believes the best about people. Doesn't impugn motives until there's evidence somebody's in error. Love believes all things. Love that cares about people. It's not feeling love. You care about people. And so that's a pretty important passage. Look at Romans 13 because it goes along with that hand in hand. Romans chapter 13. Verse 9. Let me start at 8. Owe nothing to anyone except to love one another. For he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. For this you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder. Let me stop a moment. Why do you not commit adultery with your neighbor's wife? Because you love them. Say, because I might go to hell. That's a good reason. That's not what's being appealed to here. You say, that's why I commit adultery with them, because I love them. No, that's a different kind of love. It's a forbidden love. When you care about them, you won't do it because it is not good for them. And so that's why you don't commit adultery. That's why you don't murder. That's why you don't steal. That's why you don't covet. And which commandment is not specifically listed but would be included in this? You shall not bear false witness. Why? Because it's not good for people. Look, he said, if there's any other commandment, would that get the false witness commandment? Wouldn't it? It is summed up in this saying, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now here's the negative, verse 10. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Love, therefore, is the fulfillment of the law. So you got these first four commandments are based on what? Of the 10?
Love God.
Love God. If God's the rightful place in your heart, you fear Him, you reverence Him, there is no other God, that's the first four commandments. The rest of them, the last six, are based upon loving neighbor. And that's what Jesus said. On these two are hinged all the law and the prophets. Love God, love your neighbor. So that's what we have here in Romans 13. It certainly bears on our topic. So those who are unduly suspicious definitely have a problem. It's going to cause a serious problem in the marriage. But the other mate has to be sure they have not given cause for that as well. Any other thoughts or comments before I go to the next point on either of these first two points that we've touched on? Yes?
Wasn't there a war started in the time of David because the king failed to believe the best about
it? Todd brought up a good point. Yes? When David sent counselors to Hanan, right? For what purpose? To console him. But what did Hanan's advisors tell him? What?
Sending spies.
He's out to spy the land. So Hanan listened to wicked men. So they embarrassed the men that David sent. And what was the result?
War.
And that's what can happen in a family. You know, sometimes families get together. One group maybe says something, the in-laws say something else. I don't like them anyway. And they start rumors around. And brothers and sisters and cousins and aunts and uncles say all kind of things about one another. Is it true? Well, I can believe it because I don't like them. Really? And so there's war. And sometimes families are separated not simply because of real things, but because of bearing false witness. Any other comments before I go to laziness?
Steve?
Yes?
This point about flirtatiousness, I think it's important in a husband-wife relationship that when the husband looks at flirtatiousness, he doesn't look at it from his perspective, but from the wife's perspective. The husband might do something that says, I'm not being flirtatious, but how does the wife do it? And vice versa, because a lot of these things probably arise, there may be some innocence, but how does the other partner do it?
That's an excellent comment.
Look in their shoes. How do they look at it?
So, Rocky, I want to get that on the record. He said what a husband needs to do is look at how what he's doing or saying from her perspective, his wife's. How would she take it? And vice versa, the wife needs to think about how the husband would take it. So, sitting down watching a football game, here are these nearly naked women out there supposed to be cheerleaders. What kind of comments does he make, and how does his wife take it? And vice versa. Maybe she sees some good-looking guy or sees one of these guys who likes to expose himself, and she makes comments. How does her husband take it? Oh, is that a slam against me? That you'd rather have him than me? And then you got problems. Yes, sir?
Stay kind of on the same lines with suspiciousness. There may be a need for the one that's being suspected of to change some of his habits, his or her habits, in order to help curtail some of this false suspicion, or however you want to put it.
And that's right.
Make it not put himself or herself in a position to where, you know, those things could be readily thought.
It's a good point that Jeff makes, that you try to avoid circumstances that would give rise to those kind of things. I know ever since I've been preaching, you know, most of you have been in these classes with me, have heard me say this. I know we've made it a policy. I've encouraged young men that I work with to make it a policy. You never, ever visit a woman by yourself. Even if she calls, I want to be baptized. Fine, I'll bring my wife. No, I just want you to come. Sorry. I'll either bring another man, I'll bring my wife, or I'm not coming. I could list names. This is not hypothetical. Names. Some of them you know. Preachers who got in trouble by the very thing that Jeff is talking about, put themselves in circumstances they should not have. And maybe there were some words, maybe there were some touches, maybe this woman is crying and sobbing, so she grabs the preacher and begins to hug him, and one thing leads to another. Good point that Jeff made. Just don't put yourself in those circumstances. All right, let's talk about laziness for a little bit. I want to start with Proverbs 12:27. You see that on your lesson, Proverbs 12:27. I'll tell you why I want to start with that one. When you think of somebody being lazy, what kind of person comes to your mind, lazy? Are they industrious? Do they do anything? That's what comes to your mind. But listen, folks, I'm here to tell you, a lazy person can be very industrious. They can be not afraid to do hard work. I'm not a hunter. I'm not one of these guys like some of these guys here who've gotten up at 3 o'clock in the morning when it's 10 degrees and go sit in a tree and wait on a deer and all that kind of stuff, kill it and drag it out of the woods and slaughter the thing and cut it all out. Say, woohoo, we got this meat here free on this deer hunt. It only costs $100 a pound. Time I paid my fees for the hunting, you know, but it was fun. I'm not that. But I respect the work and labor that these fellas go in to try to get their prey. I know back when Martin Bellera used to be a member here. He used to like to go to Colorado. I've got a niece whose husband lives in New Mexico, and they like to go hunt elk. Challenging, man, in the Colorado mountains, trying to hunt those elk. Talk about work. Look at this proverb, 12:27. A lazy man does not roast his prey. Stop with me a moment. How did he get it? You bet. I don't know what he had to do. But, phew, leave it there to rot. That's too much work. In other words, the lazy man does what he likes to do. And what's unpleasant, he doesn't like to do. He doesn't do. The lazy man does not roast his prey, but the precious possession of a man is diligence. So diligence is put in contrast with being lazy, but he had to exert some kind of effort to get the prey. I don't know how much of this particular text. You remember at the time this was written, they didn't have the high-powered rifles that we have today. They didn't have scopes like we have today. I don't know what was involved in getting their prey, but some kind of work. What would you think about a guy that just went hunting and killed a buck or an elk and say, oh, that's too much work. Let it rot. So when you read the book of Proverbs, you see the word lazy, or the older versions use the word slothful. Don't necessarily think of a person who's 500 pounds and never does anything. They just, you know, everybody's got to help them with it. That's not necessarily. It may be a fit person physically. They may be very active in certain things. But the things they don't want to do, they got 100 reasons not to do it. Look at Proverbs 20, verse 4. This time it translates it the sluggard instead of the lazy man, the New American Standard. The sluggard or the lazy person. does not plow after the autumn. So back then, you plow, and you're not on a big fancy tractor with a cabin on it and air conditioning heat. You're behind a plow, maybe with some kind of animal or something, maybe just your hand. After autumn, that old ground may be mucky. It's cold. Maybe the wind's blowing. What if he doesn't plow after autumn? What's going to happen in the spring?
No crop.
No crop. So what he's got to do is do the unpleasant. I like to eat the crop, but to get to the crop, you got to do the things you don't like to do. You got to plow after autumn. But he's lazy. And so he won't plow after autumn. So he begs during the harvest and has nothing. Poor little old me. Y'all need to share it with me, you hardworking people. Oh, y'all didn't know socialism was in the Bible, did you? And so, does that apply to a family? Are these proverbs restricted to farmers? No. If you want to make your family good, you're going to have to do some difficult things. You know what one of the most difficult things you're going to have to do that we've talked about? What is it?
Communicate.
Communicate. I don't know if there's anything you'll do that's tougher than that. I don't like to do that. Join the club. But if you want the harvest down the road, you plow after autumn. We talked about affectionate love. It's based on what in the other party? What's it based on?
Delight
in the other party. I don't like to shave. I don't like to fix my hair. Okay. So don't. Look like a slob. But don't know what the fruit's going to be like harvest time. And so if ladies want that look in his eye, they do the work, you know, getting ready, you know, some ladies, you know, it takes them 30 minutes, an hour, because they want to look nice. And their husbands appreciate that. Vice versa, men get lazy, they don't take care of themselves. I got her now, what can she do? So does it apply to the family? You can make up your own mind about that. So I've used this illustration before. A friend of mine that went through this course with me years and years ago, it was his analogy. He says when people are courting, it's like running after the bus. Man, they're hustling to get on the bus. Once they get married, it's like getting on the bus. Then they sit down and do nothing. I thought that was a pretty good analogy. But a man works hard to get his wife, says nice things, maybe buys her some flowers or gifts, or goes out of his way, maybe goes to things he don't even care to go to just because he wants to her to like his company. What happens after he gets married? Does he do those things then? I'm not interested. I'm going to watch the football game. Same thing with a woman. She works hard to get her man, to get her prey. Nah, she's got him. Now what do? To keep him interested. Are you lazy? Oh, I'm not lazy. I work hard. Yeah, that doesn't mean you're not lazy. If I understand lazy in Proverbs. Let's go back to Proverbs 6. I had this on your lesson. Look at Proverbs 6. Verse 6. Go to the ant, O sluggard or lazy person. Observe her ways and be wise. Which having no chief officer or ruler. There's part of our problem. Right there. Well, if somebody would have told me, there's nobody going to tell you. And if they did, then you'd probably ignore it. Stay out of my business. So much of our life is dependent on self-discipline. You want to lose weight? How are you going to do it? By getting a bunch of diet books? By your friends telling you what to do? How are you going to do it? What?
Work at it.
You got to have the self-discipline. No chief officer. There's not going to be anybody sitting at the table and you start to put that donut in your mouth and they slap it away. They better not. No chief officer rule. You just know this is my goal and here's what I got to do to get there. That's what they ant. No chief officer ruler. You want a certain kind of family. There's no mom and dad sitting there. In fact, they may give you bad advice. But even if they were there, you think you'd listen to them? You'd say, go home. This is my family. You've got to have the self-discipline to apply the things we've been talking about. What we prayed about with Brother Rao just a moment ago. No chief officer ruler. Well, what does this ant do? Prepares her food in the summer and gathers her provision in the harvest. So she, this ant, makes preparation ahead of time, knows it's got to do this work to get that result. How long will you lie down, O sluggard? When will you arise from sleep? And then you have the sluggard's response. So here's a question, and now here's the sluggard's response. It's in a form of somewhat of a dialogue. I'm not going to sleep forever. Just a little sleep. A little slumber. A little folding of the hands to rest. That's all. I know I need to do this, but... Oh. And so the writer says, your poverty will come in like a vagabond and your need like an armed man. How would you feel if somebody came into your family and tried to destroy your family? Why, you'd want to get your concealed weapon out of concealment and shoot them. But here, laziness can accomplish the same purpose, same end, same result. Look over at Proverbs 24. Very vivid picture. Boy, we need to apply this to our spiritual life, our family life, whatever goals we want to reach. He uses the imagery of that day, a field that people would have. So he's walking down the road. He said, I passed by the field of the sluggard, the lazy guy, the vineyard of the man lacking sense. Is he a moron? No. He's just not thinking. So he has to do the things that will bring the result that he wants. Behold, it was completely overgrown with thistles. Its surface was covered with nettles. And its stone wall was broken down. So you just imagine this guy walking along, looking over there. There's weeds everywhere. The beautiful rocks now are laying down. It's just a mess. So how did it get that way? Some enemy come in here and do this? Somebody hated him? No. When I saw, I reflected on it. I looked and received instruction. Here we have our little statement again. I intend to get to it, but just a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest. I meant to get to that wall. I meant to get those weeds out of there. We're going to finish this class, the Lord willing, this month. How many of the checklist have we went through? When this month is over, how much effort would be put into trying to apply the things we've talked about? Well, I meant to. And so he says, your poverty will come as a robber and your want as an armed man. Look at Proverbs 15:19. The way of the lazy is as a hedge of thorns, but the path of the upright is a highway can be taken in one of two ways. One, the lazy man finds every kind of obstacle as to why he can't get something done. It's like a hedge of thorns. There's thorns everywhere. Thorns are difficult. Thorns prick. So he does nothing. By contrast, the path of the upright says, I'm going to get it done. It's like, you know, big old interstate. I'm going to get this done. The other way it can be taken is that the reason that hedge of thorns is there because the lazy man hadn't got out there and done anything about removing them. They just grew up. But the upright man said, I'm not going to let that happen. I'm going to keep that clear. Either way, it's very applicable to a marriage. Look at 18:19. Turn over to 18:19. Is that what I wanted? 18:9, sorry. He also who is slack in his work is brother to him who destroys. Brother, he's the same guy that would destroy. So you slack and you work. Somebody destroyed my marriage. Yeah, it could be you. It could be you, not some outside party. Look at Proverbs 26:13. Preacher, you just don't understand my problem. Here it is. The sluggard says, there's a lion in the road. There's a lion in the open street. It's too big for me to handle. It's dangerous. So I'm going to close the door and go back to bed and sleep a little while. Excuses. We can make excuses or we can get something done. It's up to us. So we've talked about problems. What are we going to do about them? One, hopefully, learn what God has taught about the family. Try to apply that to our marriage. We've been talking about that all the way through the course. Secondly, in Ephesians 5, Paul talked about the family, didn't he? And in Ephesians 6. And then he talked about these people being engaged in a warfare against the spiritual forces of wickedness. He talked about picking up the armor of God. But then in verse 18, he said, praying always. Pray at all times. Pray about it. If there's problems in your marriage, pray about it. Ask God to help you. Ask God to help your mate. Ask God to help you together. Pray about it. And be specific. Talk to God about it. And the third thing which we have on your lesson is to grow up. Quit being children. Mature. And think about others and accept the difficulties and responsibilities of a mature relationship. Okay, I'll be gone Wednesday night. But then Neil will be teaching Wednesday, Lord willing. And then next Sunday, we'll begin Lesson 10 on the parent-child relationship. Thank you for your attention.